You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Just us in the studio this afternoon, Alan. But joined once again, I should intro the show, the segment officially. We are joined in the studio once again by our, as always, expert, Professor Alan Blackman. I've got the incorrect mic on for you. That's a shame.
Oh, there we go.
There
now,
we go.
Now, I can hear me. There
now your voice should be broadcasting on those airwaves. Perfect. Got a good lined up show today. What have we got with fighting cancer with gold?
Well, we'll talk about that in 2 seconds, but I can't possibly start an episode of Dear Science without mentioning Susie Wiles.
Right.
And,
oh, naturally.
This judgment that's been brought out, and sadly, both sides are claiming that they won.
Yeah,
and
it's a bit concerning.
I'd say that this sadly should never have been. If she's got guts, taking her employer to court like that, and all strength to her, and I hope that, you know, that everything just sort of pans out okay from here on in. So, you know, as a fellow science communicator, she's done a fabulous job, and I'm sure, you know, really nobody in their right mind would disagree with that. So thank you, Susie.
Yeah, absolutely. And stay tuned on The Wire. I'm pretty sure we're covering that in the coming week. So okay. Stay tuned. Yeah, you can tune into that.
Right,
But yes, with cancer.
Cancer, yeah.
Yeah. What a great topic to get into.
Eh? Yeah. Obviously, what we want to do with cancer is get the hell rid of it.
Right, naturally.
And in order to do that, what we need to do is kill the cells.
Mm.
Okay, so we're going to kill these cancer cells. Number one, we've got to sort of, you know, find the cancer cells. We've got to be able to target the cancer cells.
Yes.
And then we've got to be able to kill them.
Right.
So in terms of killing them, you know, hell, many things have been tried.
Mm.
Good old bleach will do it.
Right.
You know, easy peasy, you know. Put bleach in a petri dish.
That's really safe.
They won't hang around for long. You've got a problem with sort of targeting and stuff
like that.
Yeah,
that seems
with that.
A bit difficult.
But what has been found of recent times are things called nanoparticles. And in particular, gold nanoparticles have been found to kill cancer cells.
And that's not the colour, right? That's the element. Yeah.
It is indeed the element.
Right.
And when we're talking nanoparticles, we mean of the order of nanometers. Now, a nanometer is 10 to the minus 9 of a meter, which probably means nothing to many of you out there. But if you take a millimeter, you all know what a millimeter looks like. So take a millimeter and then divide that by 1,000.
God, sorry, and, quite small. Yeah.
And then divide that by 1,000.
Oh, geez, all right.
Yeah. So we're talking a thousandth of a thousandth of a millimeter.
Mm.
Okay, so these are tiny little things. You're getting down to atomic scale here.
Yeah.
And what they've found is that they've been able to sort of make these nanoparticles in different sizes and different shapes and everything, and that's quite a spectacular achievement working on that particular scale. And as I said, what has been found recently is that you can put these nanoparticles inside cells and it appears to kill the cells. Okay, and seemingly what had been found was the smaller the nanoparticles, the better. The better that they were probably actually getting into the cell.
Right. Yeah.
And being able to do its thing in there and kill it. But what people hadn't really looked at was, does the shape of the nanoparticle matter?
Mm.
Because what we can do is not only control the size of nanoparticles, you can also control the shape of them. So with gold nanoparticles, you can make little spheres, or you can make little rods, or you can make little stars.
It must be very precise equipment.
Oh, well, yes and no. Sometimes it's just sheer luck.
Right,
mix things together. Oh, yeah, no, there's a lot of trial and error in this.
I guess you can make so many of them, given they're so small.
Indeed you can,
yeah.
So these workers in Poland thought, okay, is it the size that is really important, or does the shape matter as well? And so what they did was that they prepared a bunch of nanoparticles, gold nanoparticles, so spherical ones, with a diameter of around about 10 nanometers, so
right.
Very, very small. They made little star-shaped ones, which you might think, how the heck do you make that? Well, again, probably serendipitously.
But, right.
And they had a diameter of about 20 times larger, about 240 nanometers, so
got
they were
it.
Way bigger. And they made rods, little rods as well, about 45 by 10 nanometers, okay? So the stars are the biggest, and then the rods, and then the spheres. And so what they wanted to do is put these inside the cell and look at them. Now, normally when you're looking at things inside a cell on that sort of width scale or length scale, you need to put generally things that glow in there as well.
Right.
In order to be able to actually visualize what's going on. But they've now got this new technique called holotomography.
Mm.
And holotomography allows you to look at live cells without having to put anything else in there at all.
I can imagine that would be quite useful.
And that would be extremely useful. And what this is based on is a thing called refractive index.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know when your classic example, you take a glass rod, you put it in a beaker of water, and you see that the glass rod looks like it bends in the middle when it hits the water. That's all to do with this thing called refractive index. Mm. And about how light travels at a different speed in water than it does in air, okay? And everything has its own particular refractive index, and so if you can measure the refractive index of the inside of a cell, you'll see everything inside the cell because everything has its own individual refractive index.
Right.
So they did this, and they found, no, size wasn't the be-all and end-all in this case. Mm. So they could put these tiny little spherical nanoparticles, these 10 nanometer ones, they could put them inside the cell, they can see them inside the cell, very often the cell just kept on doing what it was doing and it could still divide and conquer, as cancer cells do.
Yeah.
But what they found was, really surprisingly, so the much, much bigger star-shaped ones, these were the ones that killed the cell because they've got pointy bits on them.
Yeah. It seems...
it's as simple as that.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I was thinking, it's probably spiky is good, but I had no reason to think that.
But that's what they found, that the as you say, spiky is good. And you put these star-shaped ones in there, and what they do is that they rip the cell membranes open, and then once your cell is without its cell membrane, then the entire contents just spill out and your cell dies. And so this is very, very, very fascinating stuff and obviously is going to lead to way more work on this particular thing. So, you know, basically the guts of it is that size in this case doesn't really matter. It's the shape that's all important, which is a very, very interesting finding.
I don't know if they mentioned it in the report, but it sort of follows, at least in my mind, that the rod would not be very effective. I'm imagining like it's spinning around and getting awkward angles.
Yeah. Again, it's all about getting in. But again, how do these star-shaped ones actually get in, or do they have to get in? Is it the fact that they are on the outside and they're ripping open the membrane from the outside, or you know? But all of this needs to be looked at and everything. And you know, this could well be, you know, this could potentially be a viable treatment in years to come. What you need is some sort of delivery mechanism. If you can find some way of targeting these cancer cells, and that always seems to be the problem with cancer, you've got to target those cells specifically. You don't want to kill healthy cells, you want to kill the nasty ones. So, you know, the search continues. We'll get there one day.
We'll see how it goes.
Yep.
And then we've got here about songs sounding less complex. What's going on there?
Well, I think I probably stopped listening to the radio in about, 1980, something.
All of them? Including 95 BFM?
Well, in terms of music anyway. So this is another one of those, how did I possibly get that job type sort of stories where you think, how do people get paid for analysing modern music? That's their job. And these are a couple of workers in the UK and Denmark, and they just published a paper with the very snappy title, and I quote, "Trajectories and Revolutions in Popular Melody Based on US Charts from 1950 to 2023.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Oh, it does. It does. And this was published last week in a journal called Scientific Reports.
Mm.
And what they did was to get the top five songs as designated by Billboard magazine from 1950 to 2022.
A lot of songs.
And what they then did was to analyze those in terms of particular features that are related to both the pitch, so essentially the melody and the rhythm.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And, you know, who the heck would think of doing that? Mm. And how would you go about that and everything? So, you know, this is all computer analyzed, et cetera, et cetera. And they chose these eight particular features out of a whole bunch of other features because these eight particular features were sort of seemingly defining features.
Right, got the most sort of variance
And so the guts of it is that, and this is no surprise to me at all, being an old fuddy-duddy, That melodies are now less complex in the current days than they were in the past.
Yeah, and that seems intuitive, doesn't it?
I would have thought so, but it took this, you know, funded study to to actually confirm it. But the weird, okay, so a couple of the weird things. So they found a general trend that, your melodies are just getting less and less complex. So, you know, you're using fewer notes of the scale, essentially, is what you're looking at there. But in 1975 and 2000, they found a big drop in complexity.
Both
of those years. And so they didn't have this in the paper, so you know, yours truly had to go and sleuth this out and find, what were the top five songs in 1975 and 2000?
Big journalistic work there.
Now, you're going to be too young to know the songs in 75. I'm too old to know the ones in 2000.
Right.
I had to go and listen to them. And they're all bloody awful, I'll tell you that. Right, so 1975. So the top five songs in 1975, Love Will Keep Us Together, Captain and Tennille, a classic.
Right.
Rhinestone Cowboy, Glen Campbell, not one of his better ones, but Philadelphia Freedom, Elton John, classic song.
A classic song. I know that one.
Good song.
Yeah.
Before the Next Teardrop Falls by Freddie Fenger. Mm-hmm. Yuck. And what was it? My Eyes Adored You by Frankie Valli Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
Familiar with that as well.
Again, not his best one. Now, they were sort of claiming that in 1975 it was the rise of disco that led to this fall in complexity. None of those are what you would call disco, with the possible exception of Philadelphia Freedom, possibly.
Yeah,
it's a bit sort of upbeat and everything.
Yeah.
So, and then, so the big drop in 2000. Now, these songs.
I'll see if I know any of them.
Okay, yeah. Breathe by Faith Hill. Smooth by Santana.
Yep, both classics.
God.
Yeah.
Maria Maria by Santana.
Yep, another.
I Wanna Know by Joe.
Not familiar.
No, me neither. And Everything You Want by Vertical Horizon.
I think I know it. Off the top of my head.
So I had to go and listen to all of them, and I judged them roundly. Awful.
Yeah, right.
Awful, just rubbish. And again, in 2000, they adjudicated this lack of complexity to the rise in hip-hop. And I doubt that you'd call any of those really hip-hop, if you're sort of talking hardcore or whatever. But another thing they did find was that since 2000, the number of notes per second has increased.
That makes sense, yeah.
And so their theory is that, okay, because you've got more notes per second, it's harder to vary your pitch with all of those notes. So you go, can't really do that.
Mm.
And so this seemed to be, you know, their entire thesis. Okay, so things are getting less complex, but we're getting more notes per second. There you go.
Yeah, so. And I've got a bit of a personal hypothesis that I've just been working on here. I wonder if, because it's only assessing the most popular tracks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those would be the ones with the most mass appeal.
Yep.
So it makes sense to be less complex, maybe.
To
appeal to lots of people, you have to make a sort of bland, samey song.
Yeah, I probably couldn't disagree with you there.
Maybe grounds for further investigation.
Oh, they will be milking this one for all it's worth, don't you worry. Yes.
And I'm sure those researchers will be having lots of fun. As with, great segue going on here, these people who are pretending to be on Mars. I mean, sorry, I'm jumping the gun a little bit there. Yeah, but what's going on with this Mars experiment?
Well, that's a really good question, because it was sort of quite big news last week when they actually came out of their enclosure after 378 days spent in a 1,579 square meter space that was meant to approximate a possible environment on Mars.
Yes.
And so as a result of that, sound like a real estate thing, this. It had four bedrooms, a dining living area, workspace with a vertical farm to grow veggies, and a medical room.
So not on Mars, but on fake Mars with fake houses and fake plants.
And simulated Mars walks as well.
So
I'm not quite sure how they did that, whether they got them out into the sand or stuff
Some
like
sort of weird magical simulation.
This is in Texas somewhere. Mm. So basically, as I say, they've been cooped up for 378 days. So these are four volunteers. And boy, you'd have to be crazy to volunteer for something like this.
Right, yeah, you're not even getting paid for
exactly.
that.
Exactly, you'd have to be quite well off, number one. I would think, you know, you've got to be able to, or unemployed, I guess.
That's free food, right? I suppose you have to farm it yourself.
Yes.
But it is it free if you're having to farm it? Like, I'm not sure.
And again, there's a whole lot of things that they really didn't go into. I presume this will come out later. But like, for example, did they have, dare I say it, meat?
Yeah, probably not, right?
I'm assuming not. If they're growing all their veggies and stuff like that, then I'm assuming that there's no meat there.
Probably some beans for protein, something like that.
The cute thing I found was that, so if they had communication, obviously, with the outside world, but they had a 22-minute delay on that, or a maximum 22-minute delay. So that would sort of, just like Mars is going to be, you know. So... So basically, you know, they're trying to find whether people can survive together for the time that they would be spending potentially on Mars.
Yep.
I would have said that's probably the least of their worries, because what they've got to do, or what they're sort of possibly not looking at here, it's going to take 9 months to get there, and it's going to take 9 months to get home.
Yeah.
Those are your most favourable circumstances.
And they've also got all these buildings there, right? How are we going to get those all the way to Mars as well, right?
So I think it's going to be the nine-month trip that's going to be the killer. So you're going to be cooped up in a very small craft.
Yeah, 9 months in space.
Yeah, so 9 months there, 9 months on the way back. Whoever the first people to go to Mars are going to be, who, you know, even if we actually do end up going there, it's going to be, it's going to be a big deal, I guess. There's a great movie out there which is sort of like this, called Capricorn 9, where they fake a mission to Mars.
That's really interesting. The whole fake moon landing stuff. But
yeah, no, this is a very good movie. Only trouble is it's got AJ Simpson in it, but it was before he was bad. Go and watch that for a very, very similar sort of story. It's well worth a watch.
And we'll hopefully catch up on this story once they release more information. I'm very keen to hear about... what actually went on in the in the facility?
Yes,
what's going on there? Did these people survive well on Mars, or were they kind of screwed over? All right. Thank you, Ellen, for coming in this week.
Thank you,
Moshe, and thank you, Science. We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.